Hello once again, everyone. This is Brett Ridgway with Author 101 Online. I want to welcome you to another live training, and I'm really excited about today's training. I'm going to be interviewing a client of ours, Steve Snyder, who's the author of the best-selling book, Shot Down, and we're going to dive into the nitty-gritty about how the book came about, what all led up to what ended up in the book, essentially, the mechanics of cover design, editing, what processes you went through to crank out such a good book. And then I want to talk about marketing also. So first and foremost, as with all of our trainings, if you wish to ask our guest any particular question, the best way to do so is right through the GoToWebinar control panel there. Just type your question in the box there, and I will feed it to Steve as is appropriate. But first and foremost, Steve, welcome aboard, my friend.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, Brett.
All right. So as I mentioned, Steve has written an excellent book called Shot Down, which is a story of his father's experiences in World War II. And we're going to dive into a bit of that as to how it came about. But first of all, Steve, tell me a little bit more about your background so people understand where you came from and how you got into all this.
Okay. Well, I was born in Pasadena, California, and raised in that area. Went to college at UCLA, where I graduated with a degree in economics. And then I had a 40-year career in sales and sales management. The last 36 years were working for a company called Vision Service Plan,
sure.
VSP,
mm-hmm.
which is the nation's largest provider of vision care as an employee benefit. It provides for eye exams, glasses, and contact lenses that corporations offer their employees. I traveled the last 25 years with VSP. I traveled extensively all around the United States. I was VP of National Accounts for 10 years. And then even though I live in Southern California, I headed up our Eastern Sales Division for 15 years, which was everything east of the Mississippi.
Okay. So you got a
few road miles
on you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I earned a lot of frequent flyer miles and a lot of hotel points. And then I finally retired from VSP in August of 2009. I live in Seal Beach, California now. I've been here since 1972. It's a little quiet beach village in Orange County.
Well, we have a couple of things in common that you don't know about, Steve. Number one is UCOA. I actually have a continuing ed degree from UCOA. So I have been out on campus many times. My business partner and I did a program out there a few years ago where we were flying out to Los Angeles every Thursday, going to a class all day Friday, and then coming back on Saturday. We did that like 12 weeks in a row or whatever.
Oh, well, great. Go so Bruins.
I got a Bruin connection there amongst all my other degrees. My first job out of college was actually selling industrial training, and one of my first clients that I sold was a naval station there at Seal Beach. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like half a mile from me.
Never been there, never could teach any of the classes that I was selling, but, you know, despite my lack of sales ability, managed to help build a industrial training company to a few million dollar operation. So I am aware of Seal Beach. So.
Yeah, it's a quiet little town. It's nicknamed Mayberry by the Sea.
Mayberry by the Sea. Well, I hadn't heard that. Now, that's south of L.A. then, is that correct?
Yeah, about 40 miles.
Okay.
It's the northernmost beach city in Orange County.
All right. Well, very good. So let's talk about the book. So you retired in 2009. Obviously, you've been, I'm guessing, hearing stories from your dad throughout your life about his adventures. Or did you have to dig it all out of him and really dive more deeply than he was willing to share?
Well, growing up, I knew the basics of his World War II history. I knew he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. And he flew bombing missions over occupied Europe and Germany. And in February 1944, his plane was shot down. And he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture. And eventually was able to make it back to England. And my dad did talk a little bit about it when I was growing up. Really the event that really got him talking about it the most, because like most World War II veterans, He didn't talk much about the war, but in 1989, a memorial was built in southern Belgium to my dad and his crew, a little village called Macquemoss, Belgium, which is right near the French border. And he and the other three crew members that were still living at the time went over for the dedication of the memorial. And there he was reunited with a lot of the Belgian people that hit him after his plane went down and he was missing in action. He saw various houses where he stayed, and that brought it all back. And he started talking about it quite a bit after that. And then in 1994, for the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium and of his plane being shot down, my wife and I accompanied my parents to that event. And then I got to see it firsthand. And that's really when it became personal for me.
Sure.
But it wasn't until I retired, really, that I had the time to really delve into the story in real depth.
Well, I can tell you that we have hundreds of books that come through our facility that we handle fulfillment for. And frankly, I don't read most of them, but I read Steve's book, and it definitely is one that you want to read if you're a history buff or into real life stories whatsoever. So my commendations to you on an outstanding book, Steve. So,
well, thank you very much. I appreciate that a lot.
All right. So when did you actually begin writing then, Steve? And when, you know, was it a 1-year process, a 5-year process? What was the makeup of that?
Okay. Well, when I retired in 2009, I had no intention of writing a book. I just wanted to learn more about my dad's war experiences. And my parents had kept quite a bit of material from the war years, like all his orders and things like that. But there were two items that were most significant. One was a diary that he had written while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down. And it was absolutely riveting, so much so that he was included in a couple of books that were written, one in the 80s and one in the 70s. One was First Over Germany by Russell Strong, and the other was The Mighty Eighth by Gerald Astor. And then the second item, which was really significant, were all the letters that my dad had written to my mother while he was stationed in England that my mother had kept. And sitting down and going through all those letters was just fascinating. He was very candid in what he wrote in those letters. He talked about combat missions, what life was like on the base, what life was like in England, escapades of his crew members. And after that, I just became totally fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew, and it became my passion. So I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. I went on a quest to try to find relatives of all the crew members to see if they could provide me with any information that they might have, such as pictures, letters, articles, etc. And I was successful in finding relatives of all his crew. It totals about 50 now.
Wow.
And then I went on the internet and just spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents. And I joined a number of World War II organizations, started going to reunions and listening to veterans tell their stories. And it wasn't until 2012 that I actually decided to write a book. After all that I had learned in the previous 3 years, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling that it needed to be told and people needed to read about it. So I decided to write a book. And to actually write the manuscript, it took me 12 months, and then to publish it another 8 months. From the time I started my research to the time the book was published was 4.5 years.
I mean, what a fascinating journey, even if a book hadn't come out of it, it sounds like, so.
Oh, yeah, it was so exciting. Whenever I'd discover a new relative of one of my dad's crew members, I got real excited because we had, you know, that common tie. And finding out some stories that I didn't know about, it was fascinating. I probably wouldn't have written the book, though, if it wasn't for two Belgian gentlemen, Jacques Lalot and Dr. Paul Delahaye, who were young boys during the war. And they saw the atrocities that the Nazis committed firsthand, and it greatly affected by them. And later in life, they became local historians. They interviewed lots of Belgian citizens and members of the Belgium underground about events that took place in Mali, my dad and his crew. And they documented their testimony. And they gave me unbelievably detailed information about events that took place that would have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a great debt.
Well, I can't confess to have to ever having lived through a war like that. But one thing I found fascinating in reading the book, Steve, was frankly the sheer volume of planes and hardware and men that we went through to accomplish what we accomplished over there. I mean, it's just staggering.
Yeah,
losses of men and planes over there.
Yeah, there were 350,000 men that served in the 8th Air Force. And, most of those men were ground operations as opposed to combat crews that actually flew missions because they needed so many people to support the air war effort. But the 8th Air Force, they lost 26,000 men. They lost more men than the entire Marine Corps fighting in the Pacific, which is an amazing statistic. And there were another 28,000 airmen that became prisoners of war after their planes were knocked out of the sky by either German fighters or German anti-aircraft fire.
I mean, if you do the math, that's 54,000 men, and assuming an average crew size of 10, that's 5,400 planes shot down during the war. Am I doing the math right?
Well, there were many more that were shot down than that, but the air war took place between 1942 and 1945, and in the early years of these bombers didn't have fighter escort, and it was especially bad in 1943. At the beginning, there was no mission limit; the guys just flew until they were shot down or died, and the morale just went into the tank. And so they finally realized they had to put a limit on the missions or else there'd just be no hope for these guys to ever make it back home. So in March of 43, they put a 25 mission limit, and then you could go home. But statistically, it was still impossible to make 25 missions. The average number of missions flown in 1943 was 6. Before the plane was shot down. So it was, I can't imagine what these guys went through knowing that, every mission might be their last.
Sure. All right, so let's talk about some of the mechanics of putting the book together. Now, obviously, you used a professional editor for the book. So if you could, Steve, describe the actual editing process that you went through and why you went the professional route versus self-editing or anything like that.
Okay. Naturally, like any author, I went through and edited it time after time after time. And then I had a couple friends kind of go through and help me. But after I finished my manuscript, having no background in writing or publishing or being an author, I really didn't know how I was going to publish the book. So I investigated a number of different ways to publish it. I looked at a number of vanity publishers and almost went with a couple of those, but they just didn't seem right. And they had some bad reviews on the internet. I thought about Amazon and CreateSpace. I talked to a couple of real small independent publishers, one in Florida and one in New York, but they were a little too far away. And finally, I came across Judith Briles. On the internet. She has a company called The Book Shepherd, who's a book consultant. So I called up Judith because I really wanted my book to be professionally done. I really wanted something I could be proud of. I wanted something that hopefully, could sell and people would like it. And after talking with Judith, I decided to publish the book myself. I formed a one-person limited liability company called Seabreeze Publishing, LLC. Seabreeze is the name of the street that I live on in Seal Beach. And then Judith edited the book, but also John Mayling edited, and a couple other professional editors went through the book. And then I needed help in putting the whole thing together. So I contracted with Nick Zellinger to do the book cover and the book flaps and interior layout. He did a great job. And then Judith helped me go out, send out an RFP to different printers to print the book. And we decided on Sheridan Books in Michigan.
Right.
So it was quite a process, you know, learning how to publish a book. I knew nothing about ISBNs and copyrights and the Library of Congress and all this other stuff that you need to do to get a book out there. So I owe a great debt to Judith. She really helped me. It's not the cheapest way to go, but I'm glad I went that route because the end product was really something that I think turned out well and I'm proud of.
So for a new author who's considering the self-publishing route as you went, Steve, what should they expect to invest in good quality editing and a stellar interior design as well as cover design?
Well, I'm asked that, and I should have calculated exactly what it cost me to do that. But I think all told, probably $10,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's not insignificant. I certainly know that. And I know it's all over the board in terms of what people invest. But as you said, you wanted to do it the right way. And the result certainly speaks for itself. So let's go off in another direction, Steve. And I want to talk about book awards a little bit. I know you're a big proponent of book awards. You've applied and won a lot of book awards. Some people say, they ain't worth the trouble to apply for them because all you're doing is spending $40 or $50 or $60 every time you enter a book award contest and all that. And it just doesn't pay for itself. So what's your experience been with book awards? How has it impacted your sales as best you can tell? And anything else you want to share related to that?
Okay. Well, it was actually Judith who brought book awards to my attention. She mentioned a couple, and I'm trying to think of what they were now because it's been a while, that I should enter. And so I started entering, and I'm a very competitive person, being in sales all my life and, playing sports. I just always want to be number one and be a winner. So I started entering every book contest I could find. And after about eight, Judith said, well, that's enough. You don't need any more. But I wasn't satisfied with that. Now I've won, the book's won over 20 national book awards. And probably I've won an award in, 85, 90% of the contests I've entered. And they do cost, a few bucks to enter, but I just think the credibility and the recognition that you gain from those awards is real significant. I go to a lot of air shows around the country where I sign copies of my book and one of the flyers that I have out are some of the book awards that I've won. And that's, it really impresses people. They go, wow, this must be a pretty good book if you won all those awards.
Well, I've got to say, I entered one recently on a couple of our books and we were finalists or whatever, but the book I got beat out by was Judith's book.
Well, yeah, she's tough competition.
So I want to call her up and give her a hard time, but I didn't. So.
Yeah. So, maybe it's something, a little bit of an ego thing too behind it, that getting these awards. But I think it verifies your book and it helps. Can you quantify it exactly? No. But, it looks good on your website. It looks good in any material that you print. So I think it's well worthwhile. And if anyone asks, I get people asking me or calling me or contacting me about who have written books and they want to know what to do. And I encourage people to submit their book for contests.
All right, we'd like to see all the awards that Steve's book has won at his website, stevesnyderauthor.com. So stevesnyderauthor.com. So stevesnyderauthor.com. All right, so I know that the book that we've been fulfilling for you, Steve, has been the hardback version of the book. I see now that there's a paperback version available on Amazon. Was there a strategic decision made to come out with the hardcover first, and if so, why?
I just thought a hardcover is more professional. It looks better, and I just thought that was I never even considered printing a soft cover on my first edition. I've put my heart and soul in this, and I want it to be as good as it could be. And you have the inside flaps, and it's just more substantial. People, the old school people, or maybe people my age, they still like to hold a book in their hands. So I did the hardcover book, and then almost at the same time, an audio book.
All right. So I know that on Amazon, for example, it's available in four different formats now: hardcover, softcover, ebook, and audiobook. So what kind of mix would you say you're getting between the various formats of the book?
Okay. I had thought about doing an audio book, but again, not knowing anything about it, I didn't know how big of a project it would be or how much it would cost. And then I was contacted by a narrator, Richard Riemann.
Sure.
Who talked about, and then it wasn't as expensive as I thought it was going to be. And it's always nice to have an audio book because there's a lot of people that like to listen to those in their cars or what have you. And so we did the audio book, which I was very pleased with. And then I decided to do a soft cover book. It's kind of funny how I came to that. My book is distributed by Baker & Taylor, which is one of the biggest wholesale book distributors in the world.
Right.
And the other big one is Ingram. And I wanted Ingram to distribute my book because there are certain channels they have connections with that I couldn't get into. But Ingram won't distribute an author's book or a publisher's book unless you have 10 titles. So I was locked out. The caveat that is if you publish a book through Ingram. And so I decided to publish a soft cover book through Ingram Spark, Lightning Source.
Okay.
And I'm glad I did, because they have gotten me into certain markets that I, couldn't get into otherwise. Certain retailers that only acquire books or only use Ingram, so that I make a lot less money through Ingram, but it gets my book gets more exposure, which is the big thing you're looking for, and I make a few dollars for them. So I decided to do the soft cover through Ingram. But to answer your question, the hardcover book represents the vast majority of sales.
I was in a Barnes & Noble recently and was tickled to find one of my books on the shelf, which was the first time I'd seen that. It's still a kick seeing your book on the shelf in the actual bookstore, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It, my book's carried by Barnes & Noble, although, a lot of stores, they don't keep it in stock. So I tell people if they want to go to a brick-and-mortar store, they should call the store first and make sure they have it in stock. Because if not, then they can just order it from the Barnes & Noble warehouse.
Now, are you familiar with the site worldcat.org, Steve?
No, I'm not.
All right. So worldcat.org is a site where you can look up your book, and it will tell you what library your book is actually in, which is kind of neat, too.
Oh, thanks.
So,
I didn't know that. I'd be curious, because I know there's some books, some libraries that they carry my book, but I have no idea how many.
I mean, there's a lot of books. What's your ISBN number, Steve?
978.
Yeah, do you have that memorized?
Oh, yeah.
All right, 978.
098.
098.
607.
607.
6008.
6008. All right, so let's search books on worldcat.org. There it is. So, according to worldcat.org, your book is currently in. Ninety libraries.
Okay, that's not very many. But
Well, that includes library districts, so there might be 4 or 5 or 10 libraries in that district. So,
oh, that's true. That's true. That yeah, that's true.
but I think that's kind of interesting. I always look every once in a while to see where your book is scattered out. I've got a few overseas and all that stuff, but anyway, all right.
Well, that's
So,
a good marketing opportunity for me. I need to hit that better.
well, certainly there is an opportunity there, and so let's talk about marketing. What's working for you marketing wise, Steve, and what have you tried that hasn't worked so well for you?
Okay. Well, although I retired in 2009, I basically am working full time again. I work full time promoting my book. I spend hours every single day. I'm on the internet a ton, doing social media. I'm all over Facebook. I do tons of marketing on Facebook. There's lots of World War II and 8th Air Force associated sites on Facebook. So I found that to be a great source of marketing. But I'm also on Twitter, and I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit. And then I try to contact anyone and everyone that will either promote my book or buy my book. I contact museums, and my book is in probably about 15 of the top air museums across the United States, such as the World War II Museum in New Orleans, the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force in Dayton, Ohio,
Here.
Mighty 8th Air Force in Georgia. I go on in any military organization, association that does a publication or magazine. I contact them to see if they'll do an article or a review. Really, anyone that writes reviews in the industry, I contact to see if they'll do a. I contact bloggers, industry bloggers, to see if they'll do blogs about my book. As we mentioned earlier, the book award. As I mentioned earlier too, I go to air shows all across the country signing copies of my book. So it's really a full-time job.
Well, I think the main lesson here is how hard you work at it. And most people, they're just so relieved to get the book written that investing true time, effort, and money, other resources into the marketing of the book is something that doesn't get done, frankly. And I know how hard you work at it because I see where all we're shipping books to all the time. So I said, oh, Steve got another one. Good for him.
And then I do pay for some advertising in different publications. I will go on and every single internet site that lists books, I join. A lot of them, I don't know if the majority of them are free, but you can list your book on those, and there's just tons of those. And then there's some you have to pay, $30 or $40 to. And then sometimes I'll pay professional social media people to do some either texting campaigns or maybe some ad campaigns. So I do spend money on that too. Basically, all the money I make on the book, I plow right back in, either on promoting my book, publicity, marketing, ads, or also all the travel that I do. I need to pay for that, airfare and hotel rooms and rental cars and meals and things like that. So I basically spend everything that I make.
Well, it's truly a passion project for you, obviously being retired and not a business. You certainly run it like a business, which you need to do to succeed at it, but it's more about spreading the story than anything else, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's my passion to get the story out because World War II is fading in the memory of people. There are not that many World War II vets left. 90%, 97% of all the World War II veterans are no longer with us. And baby boomers like myself, you know, we, most of us have a tie to a World War II vet, either if it's not a father, it's an uncle or a cousin. But, you know, after the baby boomers are gone, you know, there won't be that many people that had a direct, that have a direct connection to somebody who fought in the war. So we need to keep the memory alive.
Yes, we certainly do. So how much traveling are you then now doing for the book, Steve? I mean, how many events are you speaking at per year, essentially?
Okay. Yeah, I also do a lot of speaking. I developed a PowerPoint presentation. I have one for 40 minutes and then one for 20 minutes. If you speak at service organizations such as a Lions Club or Rotary or something like that, they're on a time frame, so you only have 20 minutes.
Right.
And I contact every organization I can find and ask them if they want me to come out and speak. So I do quite a bit of speaking. If you go on my website, there's a tab for speaking, and you can see all the events that I go to.
I'm on there right now.
The majority of the speaking I do is in Southern California, where I live. But anytime I travel out of state, I contact organizations to see if they'll have me speak. I contact the local newspapers to see if they'll do an article on me. I'll contact TV or radio stations to see if they'll do come out, to try to get as, you know, much mileage as I can out of that trip. But I probably make about, a dozen trips, I'd say, just off the top of my head, a year.
Well, your schedule is a lot busier than that in 2017, it certainly looks like.
Well, I'm 12, like, trips where I have to get on a plane.
Okay. I mean, I see you're going to be in my neck of the woods in October. So you're certainly welcome to come over and pay us a visit too, Steve.
Yeah, October's a real busy month. Really, from, I'd say, March to October is the busy period of time. It slows down quite a bit over the winter. But yeah, in October I have a trip to Indianapolis, New Orleans. I forget off the top of my head now, but...
So do you ever see a second book coming down the pike?
Well, I'm so busy trying to promote this that I keep pretty busy with it. And then the other thing I'm working right now is I'm going to make a documentary about the book. I went to Europe a year ago and went to Belgium and spent 3 days filming all the locations that are described in the book.
Very cool.
And then I went to Munich, Germany to film an interview with Hans Berger, the German Luftwaffe pilot that shot down my dad's plane. So we have 16 hours of raw footage, and I've just kind of contracted with a filmmaker here. Well, he's not really a filmmaker. I don't want to overhype it, but he does documentaries and things. And we're going to work on that and try to narrow all this down and maybe do some more footage and then have a nice tight 45-minute documentary.
That's very cool. That would be good to see. So we talked about the marketing aspect of things, Steve. What have you tried that hasn't worked for you?
Well, you mentioned bookstores earlier. I haven't found doing book signings to be very worthwhile. You just don't get the turnout. You just get a handful of people. In fact, I went to one. I drove all the way out to Riverside, which is about an hour from my house one time, and no one showed up to the bookstore. Turned around, drove an hour back. So the only one that I've done that has really been successful is a Barnes & Noble one near me, and that got a lot of publicity in local my Seal Beach paper and the Orange mm-hmm. County paper. And, you know, I have friends in the area. So that went really well. But other than that, I found that bookstores aren't a very, efficient way to go. So I stopped doing those unless I can get a honorarium. And I've done enough speaking now that I try to get an honorarium, but if I can't get one, I'll still go out and speak depending on if there's a large enough crowd. You know, if only 10 people are going to be there, I don't go anymore. So I have to have at least 20 people or 25.
So when you attend something, Steve, like this 306 Baum Group Historical Association reunion in October, hundreds of people involved? I mean, how big are these things?
Well, that one is, last year we had 140 people there. And I did a Baum reunion out in Palm Springs with about 140. I'm going down to San Diego in October and going to Salt Lake City in August to do one. But the Baum Group reunions, they're between 100 and 200. Some, though, you can get, there's a couple that are between 400 and 500 you can go to.
Well, as you said, 97% of the service people in World War II have passed on. So how will these types of groups continue to be sustainable as a marketing medium for you in the future?
Well, the 306 Baum Group, I'm actually president of the 306 Baum Group. That was a Baum Group my dad was in. And of the, say, 140 people that came last year, there were 12 veterans. So the vast majority of the people who belong to these groups are second generation or even, you know, third generation.
Okay.
And so I found in my speaking and the book signings that I've done that most people know very little about their veteran. And they're just so curious and starving to know more. And by reading my book, they can get an idea of what it was like for their veteran, their father, whoever. Because the book's just not about the story of my dad and his crew. It's really about the entire history of the 8th Air Force, the air war over Europe and flying combat. So people who have a vet that was in the 8th Air Force, they can get an idea of what it was like for their veteran. So that they're still, even though the veterans are you know, few, those second generation people are so interested in learning more.
So you pushed the book through pretty fast in the scheme of things. What kind of timetable are you looking at for the documentary of it?
Well, if you call 4.5 years pretty fast, or maybe you're referring to the 12 months I actually wrote the book. But I, you know, next year sometime, we won't be able to finish the documentary this year. There's just so much footage to go through. And then we want to, you know, add some still photos in with it. My youngest son's an actor, so he's going to do kind of be the narrator, the overall narrator on it. All the footage we have in Europe, that I was kind of talking about the site or what that particular location meant. And then we have to, you know, put some music with it. We have to do some archival war film footage to it. So it's a big project. I'd be happy if we got it out by mid-year of 2018.
Okay, just curious. I actually have a friend who did a documentary on the Tulsa race riots of 1921. So if you're interested in making a connection there to somebody that's kind of been down putting a documentary together path, I'll be happy to connect you with her.
Okay, yeah, please. Thank you. I'd appreciate it. And then hopefully, you know, the documentary, you know, releasing that will stimulate a little more interest in the book.
Oh, sure. I would think there would be a great tie-in there. So, all right. So what advice would you give, Steve, to new and aspiring authors in terms of things that you've done and haven't done or wish you'd done differently or do this first, do this second? In other words, to have more success initially and not just beat their head against the wall trying to figure it all out themselves.
Okay. Well, you know, in publishing the book, you know, not everyone can afford, you know, going the route I did. You know, I would personally avoid the vanity press, but it depends on what people's goals are as well. Again, being the competitive person that I am, You know, I basically, my goal was to make my book a nationally known book, and I'm still a far cry from that. But other people, you know, they just love writing. They enjoy their writing experience and want to get their ideas out and want to get a finished product. And, you know, some people aren't that interested in, you know, really going to the extent that I have. But it really, your work just begins once the book is published.
Oh, yes.
Because once you publish a book, you know, there's so many thousands and I don't know how many millions of books that are published every year. It's just hard to get any exposure. You know, the only people that get exposure and publicity on their books are celebrities, you know, famous people. You know, they can publish a book like, I just noticed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar just published another book. He's published quite a few. And immediately, you know, he's in every newspaper, he's on TV, he's on all the radio stations, you know, and if you're an independent author, you just can't get that. You got to do everything yourself. So I think Facebook, you know, social media, you know, Twitter, LinkedIn, joining all those different author websites, trying to get exposure. You should contact your local bookstores for sure to try to get it in so they can carry it. And even though I kind of poo-pooed the book signing, I think initially that's you need to do that. Locally to get some traction and get some exposure on your book. Obviously, you have to list it on Amazon since 55% of all book sales are through Amazon. It just takes a lot of work. Try to find, you know, for you, whatever your genre is, you know, try to find Facebook sites or bloggers or reviewers that, are kind of into your genre, or any types of organizations or societies or clubs. I mean, that always helps. It takes a lot of digging and a lot of perseverance. Since I had a 40-year career in sales, really, I'm just doing what I did for 40 years. So I am in a much more advantageous spot. I'm just selling a different product rather than vision care. I'm selling my book. So that's a big advantage that I've had. I was used to taking no's, getting a lot of rejections. So that doesn't bother me.
So you've done a lot of different marketing avenues, Stephen. As I said before, the whole thing about it is how hard you work and continual, consistent effort in terms of the marketing process. How do you keep track of what you're doing? Any hints for people? Because it can be easy to get lost in the data real quick about who you contacted, what shows you've done, who you've reached out to, who you've JV'd with, whatever it may be. I mean, any organizational hints for anybody?
That's a great question, Brett. I am a very detailed person and a very organized person. My wife always kids me. She's Italian, so she's like scatterbrained all over the place, but she's creative. I'm German, so, you know, I'm very focused. But I keep really detailed records of everyone that I contact. I have umpteen folders on my computer. And on my contacts, I categorize all my contacts. I categorize and put all my contacts in folders. So I know, and I every email I send, I put in a folder, so I have a history, and subfolders in those, you know, general folders, so I can find anything, and I know I can refer back to any time I send an email to someone. So I think it's really important to keep good records, and I contact so many people. One thing I'll tell you that I do, which is probably ridiculous, but it's just the way I am. I set up Google alerts for certain keywords, such as shot down, my name, Steve Snyder, the 8th Air Force, B-17. And so anytime there's an article, either in the newspaper, or on the web, I get emails every day, alerts on, and it lists all the websites that mention B-17, World War, or World War II, 8th Air Force, and all these. And if they, I click on them and I look to see who wrote the article, and if there's an email address, I send them an email saying, you know, saw your article about such and such, you know, thanks for writing it, you know, we can never forget the sacrifice of the guys who fought World War, blah, 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 World War II. And if you're interested, please check out my book. And then I write them a little bit. And, you know, most of these go totally ignored or unanswered, but some don't. There's some newspapers that'll write back and say, this is a great story, and they'll put it in their newspaper. And the most recent one I had, it was a TV station in Reading, Pennsylvania. I went back there for the World War II weekend, it's called. It's a huge show. And they brought a camera crew out to the airport and interviewed me and had it on the evening news that night.
Hey, you're a celebrity, man.
So when one pays off, it can pay off. And from, you know, a newspaper article or being on a TV news spot in the evening news, you're reaching a lot of people. So I just stay at it.
Well, that's the key. Stay at it. And so, all right. Well, I want to thank Steve very much for joining us today. Steve, if people wish to get a hold of you, find out more about the book or whatever, what's the best way to do so, please?
Okay. Well, you can send me an email, steve@stevesnyderauthor.com. And I answer every email that I get. Or if you want to call me, you can call me too. My home phone number is 562-598-6902.
All right.
And then I have a couple Facebook. I have a personal Facebook page, you know, okay. Steve Snyder. And then I also have a Steve Snyder Author of Shot Down Facebook page.
Well, as we talked about, Steve works at it harder than about anybody I know, and it is all about continual effort. So I appreciate you very much, Steve, taking some time out of your busy schedule to share with some of our listeners today what all you are doing, what's worked, what's not worked, etc. Congratulations on all your success. And again, when you're out in Indianapolis in October, if you can shake time loose, come over and check out your books firsthand here in Terre Haute. We're about an hour away.
Well, also, we have the B-17 Madras Maiden flying in to the Indianapolis airport. You should come over for that. And if you've never seen a B-17 in person, it's quite a sight. You can crawl through it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. So, everybody, thank you for joining us today. Next week is an Ask Rick call, and then the week following that, Eric Vanderhope will be joining us again. We're going to dive into some of the newest things with Amazon, because it still is the 800-pound gorilla in the book-selling world, and they're always doing new things, new marketing programs, et cetera, so we're going to be talking about Amazon some. But Steve, thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you, Brett. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it.
You're most welcome, and I will send you that contact name that I mentioned to you, Steve, as soon as we get done here. And then, again, everybody, thank you for joining us. Have a great week, a great weekend, and we will talk with you again next Thursday. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.